Hockey. Oh, that was his first career choice, but the profession for which he studied in school and which he eventually pursued was medicine. So the world of horse racing may have lost a winner, but the field of hematology was blessed with one of its most outstanding contributors. For it was Dr. Charles Richard Drew who discovered that plasma, the non-cellular fluid part of blood, could be preserved outside the body without spoiling for much longer periods than whole blood, and furthermore, that in emergency situations, plasma could be transfused without typing or cross-matching for the individual patient. In the wake of these discoveries, Dr. Drew modernized blood collection and preservation processes. He even established his own blood bank at Presbyterian Hospital, New York. But then in February 1941, as the possibility of American involvement in a global war reared its head, Dr. Charles Drew was appointed medical director of the American Red Cross Blood Bank Program and assistant director of blood procurement for the National Research Council. Collecting and storing and distributing blood for the American armed forces would be vital to the war effort. And to ensure success, Dr. Drew was placed in charge of those operations. The honor was immensely flattering to him, but then he never anticipated the rest of the story. For only a few weeks after Dr. Drew's appointment to those lofty posts, a directive was issued by the armed services. A study of transfusion recipients in hospitals had indicated the reluctance of many to accept racially diverse donor blood. That is, whites were inclined to refuse blood from black donors. Sometimes Gentiles refused blood from Jewish donors. One patient had even told his doctor he feared being infected with Catholic blood. But the main objection was that of whites to black blood donors. In fact, some chapters of the Red Cross, responding to that frequent protest, had already begun segregating the blood in their repositories. So the American Armed Forces decided that in all wartime blood banks, Caucasian blood must be separated from the rest. Well, that directive landed directly on the desk of Dr. Charles Richard Drew, and his reply was prompt and precise. Blood is blood, he said. White blood, black blood, it was all chemically, biologically the same, and Dr. Drew was not about to cast aspersions on his past accomplishments by sanctioning segregated blood and lending credibility to unscientific notions. But the armed services would not relent. And so Dr. Drew resigned from his prestigious positions, returned to his teaching job at Howard University Medical School, and worse still, he gave up research, never to resume. 9 years later, a car accident took his life, and he was only 45. And yet in the annals of 20th century medicine, few ironies can compete with the true tale of this brilliant hematologist whose unique discoveries continue to this day to save countless lives each year, and yet who was asked to validate the lie that black blood was somehow different, despite the fact that he, Dr. Charles Richard Drew, was himself a black man. Now you know the rest of the story.
This hour of Sound Off on KPRL brought to you by Buy the Book Heating and Air, your local reliable heating and air expert. Call 805-423-5119.
238-5775. 238-KPRL. Sound Off continues on KPRL, the North County's number one choice for news, talk, and sports. This is Sound Off on the right choice, KPRL.
Okay, we're back, and as it was stated, the phone lines are open, 238-5775. Give me a call. Tell me what you're thinking about today. Got a couple of Kamala quotes for you here. This is one when asked if she would accept the election results if Trump is the victor. She said, Kamala Harris, "It will be a free and fair election if we, the American people, stand up for that. You know, I see it as this. I think that the democracy has, it's like two points of nature. One, there's a fact about a democracy that when it is intact, it the strength that it possesses in terms of the protection of people's individual rights and liberties." I'm not sure what she's trying to say there. Here's another Kamala quote. Maybe this will make it more clear. "Every moment in time, and certainly this one, see the moment in time in which we exist and are present, and to be able to contextualize it, to understand where we exist in the history and in the moment as it relates not only to the past, but the future." I have not a clue what she's trying to talk about. Maybe somebody can enlighten me. Okay, let's talk about some things that affect you directly there in the California Central Coast. I know you spent years and years building up the spaceport down there at Vandenberg Air Force Base. I know Andrea Seastrand, former Congressman Andrea Seastrand, had a lot to do with that, along with many other people in the community, to build this up, to have a future in the cutting edge of space. Well, you know, they launch a lot of rockets out of there from Vandenberg. It has nuclear missiles and other things. It has an anti-ballistic missile defense system, I think, is deployed at Vandenberg, but also it has a spaceport. And they've been doing a lot of launches down there, and SpaceX, owned by Elon Musk, has been launching different rockets from there as well. Well, the California Coastal Commission has decided to weigh in because Elon Musk and SpaceX is doing it there. Now, he needed a permit. He wanted to start launching up to 50 rockets from Vandenberg to some of the satellite stuff he's doing. It's kind of vital to our national security. It's the only spaceport on the West Coast, really, and it's really important to what we do. But they don't think that's important. They don't believe in the First Amendment because, see, Elon Musk is openly campaigning for Donald Trump. And the California Coastal Commission is upset with that. So what they basically did is they denied him permission to launch those 50 rockets. So you have to get a special permit for this. He knew it's working for the U.S. Air Force and the U.S. Space Force. And during the meeting they had, Commissioner Gretchen Newsom expressed concerns over his political posts on social media and the working conditions of SpaceX. He said, Elon Musk is hopping about the country, spewing and tweeting political falsehoods and attacking FEMA while claiming his desire to help the hurricane victims with free Starlink access to the internet. It appears that rather than prioritizing the welfare of SpaceX employees, the environmental focus has been on profit maximization. Then you had Commission Chair Carol Hart acknowledged that while the commission was dealing with political matters to some extent, involved the U.S. government, the Coastal Commission, Musk had aggressively injected himself in the presidential race. Bottom line is they reject his bid to launch, doing more launches because of his free speech exercise in favor of Donald Trump. Now, Musk's response is predictable. He's going to sue the California Coastal Commission, as he should. They shouldn't have to do anything with the state of California on Vandenberg Air Force Base. It is a federal facility. It's an Air Force base. Why in the world the Department of Defense is putting up with this is beyond me. As Musk said, he said the commissioner's comments are incredibly inappropriate. He said his post on the platform had nothing to do with the Coastal Commission's SpaceX launches. And he said he intended to file a lawsuit against the commission for violating his First Amendment rights. And clarify, he would file actually on Tuesday to do that. And the commission also disagreed with SpaceX military's characterization of launches as federal agency activities, which exempt the company from obtaining a permit to carry out launches. Bottom line is these people are really full of themselves, and they don't care how much they jeopardize national security to make a political point. And it's going to take some time, it's going to take some money, and I hope the federal courts slap them down extremely, extremely hard. Other things that the left is doing in the United States right now to basically sabotage the ability to have a strong national defense and robust space program or any other military program. Right now, under the Department of Defense, they're saying the number one priority and the major focus for preparing the armed forces to fight the next conflict is not strategy, it's not weapons systems, it's not even better training for recruits and basic training or advanced training or anything else. They want them to fight climate change, and they also want to make sure they do it in a politically correct manner. Basically, say the greatest threat to our national security is the weather, according to them. So they're building seawalls around military bases that probably aren't going to have to worry about it, redesigning base structures to withstand winds that aren't increasing, and moving towards net zero in energy use. Now, what does that really mean? Well, let's see. They want electric tanks. Electric tanks. So I guess they have to wait for the charging station somewhere out in the middle of the desert to charge up their tanks like they did in Desert Storm. Right? Wrong. No army on Earth uses electric tanks. Jet A is a standard kerosene fuel that this particular defense official is worried about, could spill off America's tanks, has an energy density of 12,000 watt-hours per kilogram. That's about 2.2 pounds. In comparison, top-of-the-line Tesla 4680 lithium-ion car battery has an energy density of just under 233 watt-hours per kilogram. Now, this is 12,000 watt-hours for jet fuel versus 233 watt-hours per kilogram for a battery. Russia and China are going to really love this. Force redesigning that makes America's tanks 50 times less efficient and more vulnerable. Great. Well, they also want environmentally sustainable meals to be served to soldiers and MREs. I'm not sure what that means. They're going to feed them crickets or something. Right now, they have did surveys of service members, and 68% of enlisted service members said they've witnessed either moderate or significant politicalization of the military, with two-thirds expressing concern over it, and 79% of all recruits come from families with a history of military service. What does that mean? That means people like me, my son, will not encourage members of our family to join the military. Now, we've had like four generations consecutively that have served. In fact, more than that, my wife's family goes back to the French and Indian War. My family goes back to the American Revolution on my mother's side. And my father's side, we go back to World War One. The bottom line is, every male member of my family has served in the armed forces at one time or another. I'm not encouraging anybody to do that, not under the Biden-Harris administration or the Obama administration or anything else, not willing to get politically correct generals, because it's not worth it. Not worth it to their career or anything else. These people will be discriminated against. They'll be harassed. They'll have their self-esteem destroyed. And frankly, I don't believe they're training our people to win. I don't believe they're giving them the weapons that they need to win. I think sending this military and this state that it's in right now to war is going to result in a military catastrophe. I mean, what have we had? In Vietnam, we had the Democratic Party pull us out of Vietnam precipitously and abandon our allies. We had Barack Obama, Democratic Party, pull us out precipitously from Iraq, result in the rise of ISIS, the slaughter of 50,000 Iraqi civilians, Yazidis, thousands of women and girls kidnapped, raped, sold into slavery, and everything else. Same thing again in Afghanistan. Joe Biden ignores every bit of military and intelligence advice. Harris says she was with him when he made the decision and says she agrees with every decision he made, precipitously pulled out of Afghanistan in one of the most absolutely botched withdrawals I've ever seen. And by the way, General Austin, a current Secretary of Defense, was the same guy that did the retrograde or retreat from Iraq, is the same guy that organized the retreat from Afghanistan and this absolute fiasco, this disaster that occurred where we left thousands of Americans back there, didn't even tell our allies were leaving, left the largest military base we've ever created overseas there with billions and billions of dollars in military equipment, and they left it all there for the Taliban. They did it precipitously with virtually no notice, did not practice, rehearse anything. The State Department under Anthony Blinken, Biden's Secretary of State, Biden-Harris Secretary of State, did not participate in any of the drills or plans or anything else. He sent an underling to monitor all this stuff, so when it came time to leave, they had 3 days' notice. When it actually happened to withdraw, when the Taliban took over in Kabul, Afghanistan, guess what? The president was on vacation. The vice president was out of town. Nobody was around. You know, he was basically sitting at Camp David, you know, doing teleconferencing with people in different places, and the Taliban had already overrun the airport, and that's what led to the death of those 13 American soldiers and Marines that were there who should not have been at that base at all. They should have been at Bagram, which could have been much better protected than that tiny little airfield that they made everybody withdraw from. It was a disaster. That's what these people do. That's what they do all the time. The military is not prepared. There's dangers to our submarine force that we're going to be literally outclassed and certainly outnumbered by Chinese submarines if we try to defend Taiwan. The next 4 years are going to test the next president, as no president has been tested for a very long time. And I'm very concerned about that. I'm concerned about the decline in the armed forces overall, the lack of Americans that are even qualified to enlist in the armed forces under current standards. I think only about 24% of young Americans are physically, mentally capable of joining the armed forces without special waivers being granted and things like that. And again, finding people who want to serve. You know, you can't purge people out for their religious beliefs and their heritage and things like that. Tell them they're a bad person because they're a white male and you should feel guilty about being born white and male or something like that. And expect to have a winning force, just like when you have radical environmentalists in California telling vital national security programs that they can't be conducting operations because they don't like some of these political points of view. Made in their own time and their own privacy, has nothing to do with the operation. That's the kind of short-sightedness we have. That's what's going on. Okay, the lines are open, 238-5775. I'm going to talk about the climate until you decide you want to talk about something else. We just had a big disaster out here. I want you to envision this. It's the year 2035. They've got the Democrats, and Kamala Harris has been president, you know, for 8 years. She's got her wish before she left office that we have massive adoption of electric vehicles. They got about half the vehicles in California are electric vehicles. Try to imagine that. And we have a hurricane. What happens then? Let's see. Where are they going to charge those cars up? There's not enough gas in some cases. What are they going to do when they don't have enough electricity to do it? You had to flee 500 miles inland, but you get a certain point. Everybody's waiting at their charging stations. They're not waiting in a gas station for 10 minutes to fuel their tank or 5 minutes to fill their tank. They're waiting for a half an hour per car, and you got millions of people. Could you conduct an evacuation from Florida like they did to escape Hurricane Milton, which came across, and all those cars leaving the state? Could they do it? Can you think they'll actually get out in time? Or are you going to have all these people trapped on highways with dead batteries because they can't do it? Electric vehicles could not have evacuated Florida. How about if we have a blizzard hit up in New England and we have all these electric vehicles? They don't do well in cold weather. And you get caught. A nor'easter comes in and catches a lot of people at rush hour, and their batteries start going dead. And they're stuck in their cars. And they're in Chicago on the loop when they're stuck in their cars. That happens all the time. People with gas-powered cars, they can turn on their heaters. They can survive for a while until they get out of there, until firemen rescue them, whatever's going to happen. The electric fire trucks, how's that going to work out? The bottom line is they're not thinking these things through. They're not thinking them through at all. They don't really care. They don't care about what science actually says. You have Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, AOC in the squad. She's always screaming about the world's going to end. We're all going to die if we don't adopt electric vehicles. We don't stop using fossil fuels. She says, oh, we got all these hurricanes. They're more intense. We're all going to, the sea levels are rising. We're going to drown. Well, this is what they actually tell you. The people that actually monitor hurricanes and such, what do they come out and say? Hurricanes striking the United States are not only occurring at normal rates historically, but we have recently enjoyed long stretches of historically low hurricane activity. And they also talk about the floods we just had here on the East Coast. They had big floods in 1916 in Asheville, North Carolina, every bit as bad as the one we just had. But gee, we didn't have all this fossil fuel concern. We didn't have all the other concern about carbon dioxide in the air or anything else. We've had disasters for a long time. You have big floods in California, big floods in the East Coast. Did you know that the Appalachian Mountains frequently get 10 inches of rain in a single rainstorm in a single night? It's almost like a tropical climate in the Appalachians sometimes. This one a little different because we had lots of rain ahead of time for weeks. The ground was saturated. Then we had a hurricane come in and sit on top and dump 30 inches of rain in some of these valleys and some of these mountains and all came down. No place to go. That happens. I mean, stuff like that happens, and has happened for a long time. And by the way, sometimes the people that are doing the climate stuff that they put out to you, they change the reports that the scientists actually write. Scientists have actually written that there is no increase in intensity or frequency or duration of hurricanes, and yet the International Panel on Climate Change, when they did the summary, which is written by politicians, not by scientists, said the exact opposite. They literally lied and put that out, and that's what the press picks up and repeats to all of you. So, anyway, those kind of things do happen. I just want to let you know that. And you have to do a little research to get to the truth. You're not going to get it from your local TV or radio station most of the time. But that's just the way life is, I guess. What is California doing? Well, here's one. Back to the home base here. I don't know if you're aware of this or not, but apparently Newsom, Assembly Bill X2-1, increase low carbon fuel standard cost. The California Air Resources Board is going to be voting on stricter limitation of the state's low carbon fuel standard, driving up the cost of gasoline from 47 to 65 cents higher per gallon beginning next year. And I read someplace it's like it's Newsom signed something this week. It's going to increase the cost of gas for you 67 cents a gallon starting in January. Now, of course, people that have electric cars don't really care. People that can afford it, they don't like it, but they can survive it. But that girl at the pump with the baby in the back seat who's a single mom, I guarantee you, she's going to notice it. She's going to suffer a lot. And that's the people who get hurt are the people, the most vulnerable members of society are the ones that are always hurting. You know, 2/3 of the people in the world right now do not have regular electricity, don't have clean water, things like that. And the environmentalists want to make a world where we go to an all-electric economy, we want to get rid of fossil fuels, get rid of fertilizers. For those people, it means starvation. It means living forever in poverty, never coming out of poverty, never being able to make their lives better. The rural electrification program that Franklin Roosevelt, President Roosevelt, did in the 1930s did enormous things to bring people out of poverty in this part of the United States. It went out to rural America, and it built, you know, hydroelectric dams, other types of power plants, stretched those power lines. It created the economic powerhouse that won the Second World War with logistics by being able to build the ships, the planes, the tanks, the things that we needed in a scale that no enemy could ever possibly match. It's just absolutely flabbergasting our enemies how much we could actually put out. As one movie they talked about, they wondered at the things they captured from an American flyer, and he's looking at chocolate cake, and he said, "Where did you get this from?" And he said, "Well, flyer brought over. Where is it?" The Americans had so much money, had such a tremendous logistic capability that they could fly a birthday cake from America to England for someone to enjoy. They had that kind of capacity. Now, the Germans couldn't do anything like that, even though they had interior lines of communication. The bottom line is that we have tremendous economy, and they are systematically taking it apart. California was a powerhouse when I was a young teenager. It was an incredible place. Everybody wanted to go to California to get a job in the aircraft industry or some other industry there because things were happening there. That was a place to be. And that was a dream of a lot of people. And fuel was cheap. When I crossed the country back in, been over 50 years, but I actually paid 19 cents a gallon. I averaged about 20-some cents a gallon, but one place I paid 19 cents a gallon. I could do that. Gas was cheap, and there's still a lot of fuel on the ground. There's a lot of opportunities to do stuff, but they don't want you to do it. And they're going to make sure that everybody's universally poor, except for the very, very rich, like the people who go with Gavin Newsom. When you are all told to not go to McDonald's or anywhere else and to stay home, he's having dinner at the French Laundry restaurant for $300 a plate. We'll be back in a few minutes.
This Fox Business News update on KPRL is brought to you by Stifel, your full-service wealth management firm since 1890. Stifel, located at 1337 Vine Street in Paso Robles. Call 805-238-3080. Stifel, 238-3080.
I'm Liz Klayman, and this is the Fox Business Report.
The major averages finishing higher for the day and notching their sixth straight week of gains, while the Dow and S&P 500 posted new record closes as tech stocks advanced and investors digested a fresh batch of earnings reports. Most of the 11 S&P 500 sectors advanced, with tech stocks the best performers, shares of Apple rising over 1% for a record close. Netflix, the biggest winner on Wall Street, its stock rising 11% and reaching an all-time high after the streaming giant delivered its most profitable quarter ever, even though its subscriber growth slowed. The Dow winners, Apple, Salesforce, and United Health Group. The Dow decliners, American Express, IBM, and Caterpillar. The Dow rising 37 points for its 40th record close of the year. The Nasdaq up 116. S&P 500 up 23 for its 47th record close of the year. That's your Fox Business Report. I'm Heather Rybarski, invested in you.
Wow, you look fantastic.
I love all the sparkle.
It's your fault. You introduced me to jewelry television. I can't stop watching.
Right. The prices are amazing.
I know. There are so many different styles and the color gemstone jewelry. Are you kidding me? Gorgeous.
And did you notice JTV also has gifts for men? I got Jake an Invicta watch that he loves.
New JTV customers receive $40 off their next purchase when they shop jtv.com/radio.
Who are you texting?
I'm not. I'm shopping jtv.com.
This Fox Business News update on KPRL brought to you by Stifel, your full-service wealth management firm since 1890. Stifel, located at 1337 Vine Street in Paso Robles. Call 805-238-3080. Stifel, 238-3080.
Driven to be the best.
The veteran-owned Ted Miles Motors in Atascadero.
The cars you want, the people you like.
Serving you for 49 consecutive years.
Just plain good deals without the hype.
Ted Miles Motors, same location since 1975.
Selling cars the way it should be done. And giving you service that's second to none.
Driven to be the best.
Ted Miles Motors, in business for 49 years, has sold over 13,000 vehicles and is the longest established used car dealer in San Luis Obispo County. So whether buying or selling a car, truck, van, SUV, motorhome, or classic car, visit their easy-to-navigate website, TedMilesMotors.com, or their showroom, 7380 El Camino Real in Atascadero, next to Farrell's Auto Repair.
Driven to be the best!
Ted Miles Motors, Atascadero.
The Sound Off lines are open at 238-5775, 238-KPRL. The North County's listening to you on Sound Off.
Okay, we're back, and the lines are open, 238-5775. Now, I'm kind of on a tear today because I have a lot of stuff I want to talk about, but I'd rather talk to you about what's important to you. So give me a call, 238-5775. Now, Newsom signed that bill to raise the cost of gas. Well, Phillips 66 said, okay, that's fine. We're closing a refinery. The refinery they're closing provides 8% of California's gas, diesel, and jet fuel. 8%. Now, he wants to maintain all this fuel inventory. It's going to cost more. It's going to cause more bottlenecks and everything else. The refinery, which is located in Los Angeles, produces 85,000 barrels per day of gasoline, another 65,000 barrels per day of diesel and jet fuel. No oil company is going to come to California to open another refinery. I mean, they're slowly strangling them. They say, oh, we're providing all these permits to drill all these fields, and they don't do it. Well, it takes, just because you get a permit to go out and look for oil doesn't mean you're going to find oil. And it takes a long time to develop an oil field, about 10 years. Same thing with offshore platforms, things like that. You're talking billions of dollars investment. And they look at the business climate, not for today, look 10 years, 20 years down the line, and say, what's it going to be like? Are we actually going to be able to actually do this? People spent billions of dollars building the XL Keystone Pipeline. They went through the entire process, the permitting process, all the court challenges, won them all in the process of building. Biden gets elected. Biden-Harris gets elected. What happened? The first thing they do by executive order, they shut it down. Close it. Nope, you're not going to do it. They put something like 200,000 people out of work overall doing that, who were involved in building and supplying the parts of the pipeline. All the contractors affected a lot of people directly and indirectly. 10,000 workers directly, not to mention the people downstream. The bottom line is they don't care. They don't care what the economic impact is on fracking, on pipelines, transportation, or anything else. They want to shut down fossil fuels, period, because they live in a utopian fantasy that somehow this is going to save the planet, and they're playing a major role in it. What they're doing is basically impoverishing the American people. Newsom himself has caused a loss of about 1,000 well-paying jobs. Now, those people working in those refineries, I think the starting salary is about $80,000 a year. I know that's in Santa Maria from what I've been told in the past. L.A. is probably more. And those are good jobs. A lot of them are minorities. A lot of them are women. Women work those refineries as much as men. You know, hardworking, middle-class jobs. Head of household jobs. I mean, one job can basically support a family. It means the wife doesn't have to go out and if she's home, taking care of kids, to stay home. That, you know, she doesn't have to have daycare. She doesn't have to worry about that, have a job herself. And that's nice to have a choice. Some people want to do that. That's fine. But there's a lot of people that don't. My daughter is very happy, you know, since COVID hit that she had to homeschool her boys, and she's been home for several years taking care of them. And they're doing much better than they did when they were in school and they had to worry about getting beat up by gangs all the time, which was happening. And not allowed to defend themselves. That's another story. But the bottom line is another refinery bites the dust through regulation. And that's how they're strangling the American energy industry. One refinery at a time, one pipeline at a time, one oil well at a time, one natural gas terminal at a time. And eventually it's going to come down. They won't have to raise the price to things through taxes. Shortages will do that. You'll be waiting in line for hours to getting a limited amount of gasoline for your cars. They don't have to pass a law that says you can only drive every other day because you won't be able to afford to drive every other day. And if you could, the fuel won't be available. Unless, of course, you're part of a certain privileged class, which they will set up with a special pass to allow you to fill your tank every day and drive anything you want as long as you want. Let's go to the phones. Hi, you're on the air.
Hey, I was just saying that, and I said this morning that I read an interview with a whole bunch of Hispanic farmers in New Mexico, some of whom have been there for 400 years, and they have no farm labor, and they're shutting down production. And they universally say that not one single Venezuelan will take a job. They're all headed to the hotels and the government aid. They say they have work, we've got work, and we thought that these people coming across the border might help with this problem, but they don't.
Well, that's the excuse that, you know, the Chamber of Commerce and those others do say. Well, we don't have high enough birth rate now. In the 60s and 70s, we had too many people on Earth, and women need to stop having babies. They have all kinds of birth control, and young women took them at their word. They stopped having children, or they only had one child, maybe two, not enough to replace the population. So there's a labor shortage. So we'll get immigrants to come in. And when you have immigrants coming in from other countries, usually legally, there's a long vetting process, takes a long time to come in. And then they said, well, you know, the Hispanics come in from Mexico and they do the jobs nobody else wants. But what they've done is create a situation where, why would you work? I mean, they're giving you how many thousands of dollars with debit cards, and they give you hotel rooms, and they're giving you free college and free medical. I mean, it's like, you know, life O'Reilly. You know, just come up to America and they'll pay for everything.
Hispanics are supporting Trump because they're saying that, look, I've got three generations of people, you know, working in the fields.
Yeah.
And we've been paying taxes, and we don't require benefits, and they've had enough. It's like, wait a minute, how do you jump the line?
Well, it's worse than that. Go to the Central Valley right now. What do you see? You see the grapes of wrath. They have bread lines. They've had bread lines there for 4 or 5 years now because the Sacramento and the Democrats and legislation have basically choked off the water supply. Farmers pay for the water for crops, and then they come out and say you can't have it because they got to flush umpteen hundreds of thousands of gallons of water out into the bay to protect salmon that don't need it. I mean, this is the kind of stuff been going on for a long time, tearing down dams in Northern California, Southern Oregon, which provide hydroelectric power, which doesn't pollute, and basically doing things for wild rivers and open salmon runs for salmon that aren't going to come back, that haven't been there for 100 years. The bottom line is that's the kind of policies that are ruling the state. The environmental lobby has run the state into the ground, but the Hispanic community has been suffering for a long time. There are about 1 million acres have gone fallow in the Central Valley, maybe more, and hundreds of thousands of people have been affected. Their livelihoods have been destroyed. And you have red lines have been there for quite a long time, and nobody cares in Sacramento. They don't care about people they don't have to see, just like, you know, East Coast elites and West Coast elites don't care about the people that live in the center of the United States because they fly over it. They couldn't care less. That's where we're at. So, hello?
Yeah. Well, they're going to lose the Latino vote because people don't make the distinction that Mexicans who have been intertwined with U.S. culture for years are not the same as Venezuelans.
Well, no, they're not. And, you know, the other thing, too, is the people coming up from Venezuela. There are legitimate refugees blaming the Maduro government, which, by the way, the Biden-Harris government couldn't care less about Maduro stealing the last election. They're not doing anything to stop it. But you've got organized crime coming up here in the form of these gangs. Now, you had J.D. Vance get into it with Martha Raddatz a couple of weeks ago on ABC News because she said, well, it was only a couple of apartment buildings in rural Colorado. And he says, can you believe what you're saying? It's only a couple of apartment buildings that Venezuelan gangs are taking over? Well, now it's happened in San Antonio, Texas as well. They've taken on down there and they've taken over blocks of apartment buildings, and the Hispanic community has to live with the crime. These are low-income housing, largely they're immigrant communities, but they're also Hispanic communities, and now they're dealing with extremely violent, extremely vicious Venezuelan gangs, are heavily armed, and have no compunction about raping women, kicking down doors, engaging in extortion rackets. I mean, these people make Al Capone look like a brownie scout. They are that mean, that vicious in the things that they do. They make police officers go on these crime scenes and they come out gagging and retching after what they've seen these people do to other human beings. And that's happening. You're the crime statistics
and,
that are up.
And Tren de Aragua now controls the Roosevelt Hotel in New York City.
Really?
Which has been acknowledged.
I didn't hear about that.
Roosevelt Hotel used to be a luxury hotel. it's now immigrant housing, and it's been taken over by Trendyaragua.
And, you know, you got politically correct leaders in New York City, and they will probably downplay it and say, well, it's just confined to that hotel. If you ignore it, you don't have to report it. And police officers aren't going to, you know, stick their necks out going in there and start proactively policing and protecting people against these people because the administrations won't support them. You have the defund the police groups. You have all these other groups, you know, liberal groups out there, and they're perfectly fine with this as long as it stays in the Roosevelt Hotel or in low-income housing projects in Aurora, Colorado, or in San Antonio. They don't care. They really don't care. Now, if it goes out in the high-end suburbs where they have high-end shopping centers and starts affecting there, they'll probably get upset about that and demand more security or something like that. Or simply order things online, which a lot of them do anyway. But they don't care. I want that firmly embedded in people's mind. These people that are running the Democratic Party today do not care about the American people. They don't care about you or me or anybody else, middle class, working class, at all. It's kind of like the Hunger Games where they kind of fence off different districts. And, you know, if you're not the right political persuasion, you just kind of want the short end of the stick. That's kind of what's being created in the United States by these people. And Kamala Harris, I'm sorry, she represents that. That is who she is. She's a daughter of privilege. She lived a privileged life. She lived in Canada a good part of her teen years growing up from wealthy families, went to elite schools. And then she says she's working class, worked at McDonald's for 15 minutes once. So I don't know, but that's where we're at.
People have a choice. How you can go to elite schools and come out that stupid is... beyond
belief. That's not hard. I mean, you got parents to pay that. Look at what's happening in Columbia and Harvard and Princeton and all these kids, you know, marching in the street calling for Jewish blood, you know, and thinking the Nazis are great and Hamas is great and one and the same. And, you know, believing all these lies that are being told. As if butchering children, babies, and things like that, burning people alive is somehow acceptable. I don't know what happened to our elite universities. I mean, I was in school. They were anti-Israel in the social studies departments because they're anti-Semitic to the core. But the bottom line is that, you know, these kids are buying it, hook, line, and sinker. That's all they've heard. And they've been coddled from the cradle to grave to believing certain things, and they don't seem to be able to think clearly for themselves at a cost of only $300,000 for a college degree. And that's what we're getting. I don't know.
So. Well, thank you for your time.
Hey, well, thank you for your call. So, anyway, I started talking about crime. You know, about a month ago, they came out and Donald Trump was saying that crime is up, and they had his fact checkers come out and said, no, the FBI says crime is down. Well, guess what? The FBI has had to review their crime stats, and instead of being down 2.1%, it's actually up overall 4.5%, including violent crime, murder, rape, robberies, aggravated assault. They kind of mess up their stats. And it's nice of them to correct it, but why do they only correct it after the last debate? I think the American people have the feeling crime is up. You look at all the mass looting that takes place in retail stores. You go to a drugstore in Walgreens or CVS, anything like that, and they got all the stuff, you know, locked up behind glass panels and things like that, plexiglass with padlocks. You got kids coming in and looting jewelry stores and other stores. You know, 100 will charge into store, beat up employees, strip everything off the shelves for whatever reason. And it's all facilitated by internet and street gangs, which plan this stuff. So this is the kind of stuff that people need to be aware of. When someone's telling you, don't believe what you see, because that's basically what the administration is currently telling you and the federal government, don't believe what you see. Don't look what's behind that curtain over there. It's not really true. Don't believe your eyes. And they come out and they eventually say, well, actually, we made a few mistakes. But they said it very quietly. You're not going to hear it in the mainstream media. At least it's not going to be front page news, not going to be headline. But it's happening. And the truth will come out eventually. The question is, will you act on it? Electric vehicles versus gas vehicles. What's the big deal? The big deal is batteries. Do you know that batteries are far more energy intensive than gasoline vehicles from their development, but especially their weight? Half a ton for a small electric vehicle, a ton or more for a large one, renders electric vehicles much deadlier if one hits you in an automobile crash. It went from, you know, unsafe at any speed back in the 70s to this. We got a caller, I believe, so let's go to the phones. Hi, you're on the air.
Hey, Al.
Hi.
Thanks for your program. I always enjoy your points of view. They're very informative. I was reflecting on the Obama administration. He took over a superheated economy that was headed to big trouble. And I remember he went on a program of Too Big to Fail. He started pumping all kinds of money into bad capitalist adventures like GM and AEG, one of the biggest insurance companies in the world. And with the whole premise of too big to fail. And, you know, capitalism never worked like that. You know, it was not a question of too big to fail. It was a matter of if you were overextended and you spent more money than you were bringing in and you were going bankrupt, then you needed to fail. Well, anyway, the reason why I bring that up is because it was shortly after that the stock market broke for the first time. 10,000. It hit 10,000. That was kind of a, and you know, there were people in the stock market made all kinds of money, but it also caused a lot of inflation because when the government spends money, for the most part, it's not because they earned it. It's not because they engaged in some kind of program that made the country more money. They printed more money. And, now I'm reflecting on, I just heard the other day that the stock market hit 43,000 in the stock market. I'm thinking, wow, that's four times more than it was back when Obama, under his administration, hit 10,000. And I'm just reflecting now back on 1929, when the stock market was really going really good, and then knowing that, you know, the economy out there isn't all that good. We came out of COVID-19, and, you know, we had this essential workers. The majority of people that were not essential workers were told not to go to work. And we're told that the economy is really doing real good under the Biden administration. And I'm thinking, it hasn't been, this inflation has not been so bad since Jimmy Carter. That's like 50 years ago. Yep. And I just can't imagine anyone with their head halfway on straight voting for another 4 years of a Democrat representation to make everything better, because they don't make things better. They make them far worse. That's not to say that the Republicans haven't made mistakes, and it's been wonderful. But I can say between the Trump administration and the Biden administration, things were a lot better under Trump. And
well,
I'm not sure, even with Trump going back in, if he can turn this crazy hellhole around.
Well, it's scary what's happening right now. They're talking about the market going to 50,000 in the next year or two. That could easily happen. And it's super inflated. It really is. It's, you know, you're trying to take up the slack from what happened after COVID and things like that. And all this money's pumped in the economy. It's a consumer economy. People had money to spend. They came out. They spent a ton of money, drove up inflation and everything else. But, you know, what they're doing now, the Democrats' campaign, I've noticed right now, Kamala keeps saying that Trump is unstable. He's dangerous. He's unfit. And they're trying to run a fear campaign. You can't, you know, and there's a lot, it has an effect amongst young single women in particular, especially they're college educated. They just don't like Trump. So they're running an emotion-based campaign here. And I would say, okay, well, I would say if Trump is unstable, Kamala is evil. And I'll take unstable over evil any day of the week, because the things that she is promoting, the castration and mutilation of children, making life-altering medical decisions because somebody, some counselor convinces them that you're not a little boy, you're a little girl, and we're going to put you in this program. And oh, by the way, your parents can't know about this, and if they do find out about it, they have nothing to say about it, and if they try to object, we're going to forcibly remove your children from your home. Kamala Harris supports that. Now, that's just pure evil. And the other things that she's done, you look at her record, the program she's done, she's a typical proto-ambitious politicians who will say or do anything to promote her own career. And she has proven that since the time she first got in politics as a mistress of Willie Brown in California, and that's how she got her start. And you look at her staff turnover, you know, she's not a nice person to work for, according to the people who have worked for her. She is a toxic boss. Allegedly, that when people came to work in her office when she was the attorney general, they had to come to their feet and say, "Good morning, General." They were not allowed to look at her directly in the eyes. They'd have their heads down unless she was either addressing them or they were sufficiently senior in position they could do that. Now, that's what people are saying about her. I haven't heard anybody come out and say really nice things about her at all. Not people who've actually worked with her over a period of time, whether it's her prosecution of black men to get, you know, rack up as many prosecutors as she could for minor offenses on marijuana and things like that, to the kind of things that she's done otherwise and the programs she supports. She is a far left-wing liberal. She is opposed to any kind of energy independence. She's a radical environmentalist. She's a radical Marxist. That's her background. She has groups that she doesn't like. And she made that abundantly clear when she talks, and she can actually try to pin her down. And when she was talking to Brett Baer on TV this week in that so-called interview, aside from the fact she had difficulty doing the interview, she could only do one thing. She couldn't point to answer questions about her own policy, her own views. All she could do is point a finger at Donald Trump and say, "Trump's evil, Trump's bad, Trump's unstable. You can't have him, he's unfit." And she would not stop talking, and she would not answer any questions. A candidate running for president who won't answer questions cannot be trusted. I think she is very insecure as a human being, and I think she's very dangerous. Go ahead.
Oh, absolutely. But, you know, I mean, all it takes is a person to compare the administration of Biden and the administration of Trump. Things are far better. I mean, when we go to the grocery store, when we go to a Home Depot, wherever we may go shopping, everything costs more money. And it's because of the policies of the administration of Biden has killed the American economy. Even though they play with these numbers all the time, and, you know, they can present numbers to make things look good when they're not good. And, you know, I think back on Ronald Reagan, you know, he took over a very bad economy from Jimmy Carter. And after 4 years, he said to the American public, "Are you better off now than you were 4 years ago?" And he won the biggest landslide reelection ever. And, you know, I'm thinking, you know, Trump should be able to do the same thing. I'm wondering if it's not going to be the same situation as in 2016, when most people did not want to air how they felt about Trump and how they were going to vote for him. And so the pollsters were totally taken by surprise, because they knew Obama didn't help our economy at all. He was horrible.
Well, and that's true. And you look at now, I just look at people. You go to the grocery store, how much are you paying for that? How much are you paying for car insurance? What are you paying for rent? What are you paying at the gas pump? Is there any hope for any of this getting any better? And the answer is no, because they don't have any ideas. What's an opportunity economy? That's all she says. What is that? What specifically? Well, there's no specifics. And all we have right now is the same people making the same policy decisions they made before. And you got her flat out lying about what she's going to do on energy. And if you want to make the economy better, first thing you do is you unleash American energy to make us independent again. And you got guys like Senator Bernie Sanders, a socialist from Vermont, who's an extreme environmentalist, saying, "Oh, she's just saying what she has to say to get elected. She has to be practical." And that's why AOC, Cortez, and people like that who are radical environmentalists are not criticizing her. They know she doesn't mean it when she says she's going to open up energy or anything else, that she's not going to oppose fracking. Of course she's going to ban fracking if she can, because that's what they want. And once she joins, she can come back and say, well, maybe later. We have to do this now. It's not environmentally acceptable. Or let some government agency create a regulation that gets her off the hook that does the same effect. She'll do that. And they'll get what they want no matter what, and the American people will suffer. And things will not get better. They're just going to get worse. And you know what really scares me? She comes out of a background. She's very weak on a personal basis. She was there with Biden. She has not one word of criticism about his foreign policy and his appeasement, flat-out appeasement of dictators and things that he's done and giving in to Iran and Iran-centric policy. She's going to get us into a confrontation with China where they're going to do something to test her, and she's going to appease them and back off. And the people of Taiwan will suffer. The Western Pacific will suffer. We'll be driven back. America will be knocked off its really extremely hurt, harmed by her policies in national defense. And you can't have a good national defense without a good economy. We won't have either one. America will be far weaker and far more susceptible to blackmail by the totalitarian governments of this world than we've ever been before. And the rest of the world will really suffer and become an extremely violent, very dangerous place because she's simply purely incompetent and incapable of taking a strong stand. And the worst thing will happen is she'll try to take that stand because she's the first woman president, and she'll put us into a situation where we can't win and will not listen to sound military advice, just like Biden did not. Biden did not listen to his military advisors at all, and the result was a catastrophe in Afghanistan. So we got another caller. Hey, I got to take one more call before we go, but hey, thanks for your call today. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, yes, sir. I was calling to say that, what you just mentioned, being the first woman vice president is fine, but not her. And also, it wasn't going to be Hillary, but it'll be someone else with more brains and leadership qualities. But I was going to also say that the independent vote, the youth, the young independent vote, can make or break this election. And as much as I admire Charlie Kirk, I'm going to lay it on his doorstep that he didn't hold a rally in which is called the pool, the reflective pool in the mall. He mm-hmm. could have had a rally there with a lot of youth, and a lot of older people could have donated. They have a big, big war chest, and they could have donated money on top of that to accommodate those children or kids. I don't see children. Young mm-hmm. adults for two nights and 2 days, and have speakers on the mall talk. No politicians, just pundits, conservative pundits, to get the idea out that what we're facing here, so that it would be mainly force the general the media, the general media, mm-hmm. to air it.
Well, let's hope so. The bottom line is,
he's not going to do it. It's too late.
Well, it's too late. That's the biggest thing. I just hope they get the word. They're not going to get it the mainstream media, though, but please let them know. I got one more call I'm going to try to take, but thank you very much for your call. All right, thank you. Hi, you're on the air. I got a couple of minutes. Hello.
Hello there.
Yeah, hey, got a couple of minutes.
I got a little statement to make here. I just want everybody to realize that, the Hispanic that was coming across the border 25 years ago, or when I was a kid, for the grandma that would be out there sweeping the alley and you could walk in and smell the beans cooking. Well, that's not the same Hispanic.
Hello. I don't know what happened. We just lost that caller, I think. Hello? I'm sorry. You can try to call back. I think he's trying to say not the same person coming across the border, and I would have to agree. There's a lot of people coming across that just want another opportunity. Some of them are fleeing Venezuelan tyranny. I get that. Some are just fleeing economic opportunity. But there are people coming from 160 different countries. Haiti, Middle East,
it's gonna be a lot
China.
Harder
hey, you there? You there?
And yes, I'm still here.
Okay, well, we lost you. I don't know what happened. We lost you for about a minute. But you were saying this: the Hispanic coming across the border, then the phone dropped. So what? Tell me what you had to say. You got about a minute and a half.
Okay, well, I was trying to explain it. It's quite different than the regular Hispanics of 20, 30 years ago. That mm-hmm. this is more like an Indian or Hispanic, and I work around them quite a bit, and they're really aggressive. There really is no eye contact. And that's pretty much all I wanted to say.
That they're basically good people working hard. I agree. They are very hard workers.
They are working hard, but they're not the same, and they're not quite as compassionate as the Mexican or the Hispanic that came across the border 30 years ago.
They're different cultures.
I guess it must be a little more of an Indian. They're not connected. They're not quite as compassionate, and they're pretty aggressive people.
They're urban. They're from urban communities. Right. That's part of it. And they're not rural like a lot of the Mexican people were coming across. And that's a difference. And they have different values and different expectations. I mean, Venezuela was the most prosperous country in Central and South America until Chavez and then Maduro took over and destroyed the Venezuelan economy, turned it into socialist hell. We're out of time. We got to go. And be sure to get out there and vote. We'll talk to you again next week. Have a good weekend.
This hour of Sound Off was brought to you by the Work Family Ranch, the perfect outdoor activity for any level rider. Book your horseback ride today, 805-467-3362, or go to workranch.com.
AM 1230 KPRL, 99.3 FM, KPRL.com, Paso Robles, Atascadero, Templeton.
It's 2 o'clock.